You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk and show number 384. Today is Sunday, September 17th, and my name is Hamilton. I am joined by no one tonight, as Kurt is at the Falcons' home opener at the new and halo-licious Mercedes-Benz Dome, and Steve is on his way back from a wedding. I think he was the best man at Jose Constanza's wedding, maybe Emilio Bonifacio's. I know he's close to both of them. So anyway, we have neither of them, and we also have no special guests joining us on this show. It's just me and a glass of water and a lot of thoughts, and maybe drunk Frank Wren. No, I'm kidding. And instead, we're going to mix it up, guys. In honor of our 10th anniversary, which we are celebrating this season, we're going to pull a true ABT highlight out of the archives and revisit that. And it's a good one. It's a good one. So we're going to do that, and then we're going to come back, and I'll do Shots in the Dark in the week ahead. But back in January of 2010, so 7 years ago, through connections that we had with a lot of amazing and hospitable and very gracious folks from the Braves who have been incredibly kind to us over our 10 years. But anyway, back in 2010, Kurt and Steve got to sit down with Braves legend Javi Lopez. And I'm just going to play the interview first, but then I do have a couple of things I'm going to say about it afterwards. But before I do that, remember, you can find us always at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com or at our new home on BlogTalkRadio.com, where you can also find a wide range of other awesome podcasts. And follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk. Check out our Facebook page and help spread the word and help give us a good rating. If you go on iTunes, you give us 5 stars, you write a review, that means it goes to the top and other people find out about it, and we can all it will be great for everybody. You'll have a lot more Atlanta Baseball Talk friends. So iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you find us, retweet the shows and just send us some love, guys. We appreciate it. All right, so we will be back with Kurt and Steve and Javi after the break. And I have to warn you, Javi goes on for a while. This was unexpected. We thought we were going to get 15 or 20 minutes out of him max, but he stayed on with us for over 50 minutes, 5-0. And he is, I'll say this, there are moments where he is very forthcoming during the show. So it's something to look forward to after this quick break.
Welcome to the show. Today is Sunday, January 31st, 2010, and my name is Steve. Well, Curtis, we've got one of our all-time favorites tonight. He's a Silver Slugger Award winner, a 3-time All-Star, the 1996 NLCS MVP, and a world champion. Javi Lopez, thanks for joining us. How are you tonight?
I'm doing very well. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for joining us. It's a big honor to have you.
Well, thank you.
All right, so Javi, let's start with the present and your position as CEO of Bones, your bat company. So are you guys making headway into the major leagues? I mean, how's it all going?
Well, everything is doing well. I started last year doing nothing but wood bats. The reason why I started at wood bat is because since I got the experience on the big league, I got all that connection with players and stuff. I wanted to put out there a name where, in a year or two, people will recognize, and I can start doing more, other equipment, like catcher gear, gloves, shoes, et cetera. And I think doing wood bat was the easier way for me to expand that name. Besides, I want to stick with what I know. And baseball bat has been, one of my fascination when I was playing because, I was swinging different bats from different companies throughout the years. And everything is always, every company has something different to provide the players. And I want to be, just another company, provide something different that makes a difference in the game. And, that's why I created Bones Bat last year. Hopefully, things are going well this year, and next year, well, this year is actually, I'm starting doing the aluminum bats, which is, you know, it's more popular since, you know, a lot of kids from college, high school, or Little League, they all use aluminum bats. So, you know, I'm trying to get into that, you know, level this year. So anyway, it's been excited, and hopefully things doing well this year.
Well, that's great. Well, we wish you luck with all that, Javi.
Well, I appreciate it.
Sure. So look, let's go back a few years to spring training in 2008. And I ask you this because on our show, we're a little obsessed about Frank Wren and how he deals with players. So can you tell us a little bit about how the news was delivered to you that you weren't going to make the team? And then also, who invited you to throw out the first pitch at the home opener that season?
Well, it was a tough year. First of all, I personally didn't want to retire, but after my second try, if my own team, the team that I played for, 11 years, didn't accept me in the team, well, it's not that they didn't accept me in the team. They already have these other players already, you know, that fill up the spot. And if my own team would not, if I cannot make my own team, I doubt any other team will, you know, allow me to play with them. So I decided to retire that year. It was tough. I know the spin training wasn't the best spin training I had. Physically, mentally, I was totally fine. And then right at the end of the spin training, you know, Bobby Cox called me, and he told me that that unfortunately, you know, they have Corky Miller, and they have, well, you know, Corky Miller was the only guy he mentioned. And then when the spin training was over, I found out that he ended up taking two catchers. That kind of hurts me even more. You got Brian Peña and Corky Miller. I'm like, great, and I'm out. But he told me that I can go ahead and play AAA, and I was gonna accept that position playing AAA since I already missed a year in 2007. So anyway, I was gonna accept that position, but when he told me that I'm gonna be a backup catcher, because Salmon was gonna be the everyday catcher, and I'm like, okay, well, that things have to change there. Things changed right there.
Right.
I don't want to be a backup catcher in AAA. You know, I've been through all the minor leagues. I got plenty of years in the big leagues. I'm pretty sure they know what I'm capable to do in the big leagues, so I don't need to prove anything, you know, in the minor league as a backup catcher. You know what I mean? So
sure.
It was frustrated, and you know, there was no doubt. I tell to myself that, you know, that's it. I guess this is time for me to retire. So,
Do you think that there is, by Frank Wren, do you think there's a concerted effort to kind of break away from your Braves teams, the teams of the 90s? I mean, because obviously we had the break with John Smoltz, we had the break with Tom Glavine, the situation with yourself. Do you think they're trying to distance themselves and kind of create their new identity by breaking away from some of the teams of the 90s? Do you think that that's part of it?
Yeah, I mean, we have a legacy. We create, you know, we have really good memories. They obviously thinking about the future. And, they need to start getting new players that they hope they can stay in the team for many, many years without having the issue of trying to get new players every year. There was a time with the Braves that, you know, Showholtz and Wren, they don't even have to be worried about trying to get a lot of players because our team was pretty much, you know, set. We pretty much covered. We got tremendous pitching, tremendous infielder, outfielder, you know, you name it. And I guess that's the kind of team they want to build up again so they don't have to have a hard time trying to get and fill up some spot in the lineup. And, absolutely. They try to move on with the new guys and, you know, try to get rid of all the veterans. Still ready to do their job.
Right.
Well, Javi, how did they come back to you and ask you to throw out the first pitch that night? Was it Bobby or Ren or who starts that conversation with you?
I believe Eddie Perez. I guess somebody told Eddie Perez, I don't know if that was Frank Ren, John Schoholz. Somebody told Eddie Perez. Eddie Perez told me, and I told him that, sure, you know, that would be an honor, you know, to do that. And then about a week or a few days before the opening day, Frank Ren called me, and he told me personally that, you know, if I want to do if I want to throw the first pitch. And I'm like, perfect, you know, that would be great. It's going to hurt, but yeah, I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, we were happy to see you out there. We were very disappointed, especially after your, I mean, you hit a home run. It was your first at-bat or your first game of spring training that year, right?
Yeah. My first at-bat in spring training after missing the 2008 season. I hit a home run. After that, I was hoping I could continue hitting more home runs, but that didn't happen. I guess I ended up hitting another home run about a week and a half later or 2 weeks later. But that was it. You know, my spin training wasn't the best. I don't think I never have good spin training, you know, according to, you know, my past spin trainings. But, you know, I was, like I told you, I was totally ready to, you know, be in AAA and play every day and try to get myself ready to get back in the big league. But that opportunity never come.
Yeah. All right. Well, Javi, let's get back to the 90s and talk about in 94, the no-hitter that Kent Merker threw that you caught.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point in the game did you realize that was happening? And, you know, what was going on in the dugout between innings? Was it all the no one say anything and people leaving Merker alone and all that?
Well, it wasn't until the sixth inning after my second at-bat where I was pretty disappointed just because I struck out twice. And Pat Corrales told me, Javi, you know, forget about it. You know, it's over. Concentrate on keep the game, you know, scoreless, you know. And that's what I realized, like, whoa. Sixth inning, I'm catching a no-hitter right here.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, you know, Marco was doing great, and, you know, but not until the sixth inning, I didn't realize that Merker actually was throwing a no-hitter. And after that, you know, I didn't care about my hitting, I didn't care about anything, but focusing on, you know, on Merker and make sure he, you know, keeps doing what he's been doing, you know, the first six innings. And it was hard to do because at that time the Dodgers had the best offensive lineup in the big league. Mm. You know, you're talking about, you know, Eric Karras, Mike Piazza, Billy Ashley. I mean, you're talking about bombers and guys that can hit the ball out of the park and, you know, and for average. But, yeah, Parker was on fire that day. It seems like everything he threw was, like, you know, over 95, and I feel so comfortable, you know, behind the plate that, you know, for some reason, in the back of my head, I say, you know what, he's going to do it, because you can tell when the pitcher is actually a little nervous about or a little anxious to get that no-hitter, but to look at Merker, he's like, you know, he's totally fresh, he's not even thinking about throwing a no-hitter, and I'm like, you know what, that's the perfect attitude for, you know, for any pitcher to throw a no-hitter. Just, like, focuses on the game and forget about the no-hitter. And you know what? He did it.
Now, did you catch the combined no-hitter that he threw with Wars and Alejandro Pena, too?
No, I didn't. I was actually minor leagues when that happened.
Okay.
Yep.
How strange that Ken Marker's part of two no-hitters and Greg Maddux, Tom Glavine, John Smoltz have never thrown one of those.
Never, I know. But you know what? I'm pretty sure that Ken Marker would like to change numbers.
Yeah.
Marker would say, you can take my no-hitter, but let me have those ERA and all these wins.
Absolutely. So, Javi, tell us about your incredible Game 2 in the 95 World Series, about your first World Series homer, and also that it's iconic to me anyways. You're picking off Manny Ramirez at first base. Start with the home run.
Well, the home run was, you know, I was so pumped up that day. That particular at-bat was a battle, you know, foul. I'm like, you know what? After all these fouls, I gotta have a good hit out of this at bat. And you know what? At the end, I'm like, okay, this is the swing. And I told people this before because, you know, it was on TV. At that particular bat, after I don't know 5-6 fouls, I kind of looked down and looked the shape of Tony Pena moving away from home plate.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, that's all I need to know. So as soon as I saw his shadow go in the outside part of the plate, I was like, this is going to be an outside pitch. I'm going to, you know, extend my arms, you know, as far as I can. You know what? Boom. Passed it away, got a hold of it, and hit it right, you know, center field. And running the base, seeing the fans, you know, cheering, screaming, jumping. I mean, you cannot ask for a better feeling than that in a World Series, you know.
I imagine. And and how about picking Manny off first base? When I recently watched the Major League Baseball's highlights of the 95 series, and they say that that was a called play. That you called
it
that. Is that true?
It's funny because I totally called that play. Fred McGriff denied it. And I'm like, wait a second, I gotta watch it on TV. And I watched the replay on TV, and I clearly see myself touching the ground, the dirt, with my right hand, which means that, you know, he needs to cover. So I'm going to first base. And as soon as I did that, you know, opening, I fired up to first base, and boom, catch for Manny Ramirez. So, yeah, in my part was planned. Freddie McGriff to say that, you know, I guess he said that was his reaction, just called the first base automatically. But it was an exciting moment. I was, you know, from that first home run I hit early in the game, I was so pumped up that, you know, things like that happen once you are, you know, once you have that kind of attitude, you know, throughout the whole game. And, you know, I was just happy to pick up Manny Ramirez and make the game even more excited.
Yeah, it was just an incredible game. And when you watch those highlights, they spend a lot of time on game two and you, because it was just such a standout game. Really fantastic. So let's move to Game 6, Javi. Did David Justice's comments that he made in the paper about the fans, did that affect the team heading into the game that night? Was it a distraction or a motivator, or did you guys just, you know, push it out of your minds?
I definitely push it out of my mind. I cannot let that affect us, those comments. As a matter of fact, I guess the fact that he made those comments, when we play back home, I mean, that was a big difference when it comes to the fan and the cheer and the electricity inside that ballpark. And you know what? Even though a lot of fans was offended, he definitely created, a big spark in, you know, Atlanta Stadium. And you know what? That game 6, you know, I never hear the fans screaming and cheering for the brave, you know, as loud. You know, I never seen screaming as loud.
Yeah, so he really did what he set out to do, it sounds like.
Well, to be honest with you, the fans always been great for me, you know. The fact that we went to Cleveland, and I guess, well, the Cleveland fans, they were awesome too, no doubt about it. They were loud. I don't know, it's just if they were really loud or just the fact that the stadium is closer, or, you know, it all depends the shape of the stadium, whether they can kind of trap the noise. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
Fulton County was not like that, of course.
I don't know. Well, Fulton County is a much bigger stadium than the Jacob Field. You know, Jacob Field is more like tight, closer.
Yep.
That's why you probably hear the fans a lot louder. But, Fulton County was huge, you know, in order to make that thing, you know, loud, you need to scream really loud, you know what I mean? I guess that's the reason why he made those comments, but I definitely didn't pay attention to that. I was focused on winning the game, winning the World Series, and on the other hand, you know, that kind of pumped that comment pumps the fans here in Atlanta, without a doubt.
Yeah, I have to agree. I was lucky enough to be at Game 6 that year, and I kind of agreed with David Justice. I know that probably not a lot of fans will admit that the fans needed to be more into it and needed to be more excited about where the Braves were and the potential of what could happen. And I remember that game, and I remember it being ridiculously loud. Like the stadium moving, there was so much energy in there.
Oh, yeah. It was big different from the first two games in the World Series than game number 6. Totally different game when it comes to the crowd.
Javi, how did you celebrate that night?
How do I celebrate?
Yeah.
Well, I never spent so much time in the ball field, in the ballpark. I believe after we won, I stayed there until I guess 1 or 2 o'clock. Just, you know, celebrating, talking, and, you know, keep telling, you know, my teammates that, you know, I cannot believe world champion. And my second full year in the big league. And I'm like, I told to myself, you know what? There has been hundreds and hundreds of players that, you know, played their entire life in the big, you know, entire career and never made it to the playoffs, not even win a ring. And I was so fortunate enough to, you know, my second year with the Braves, and I already have a ring. That was actually my second ring because I was part of the 1992 World Series too, but I didn't play a full year. And I got a ring from that year, but the one that means a lot to me was obviously the 95 because I played all year with the team. But it was celebrating was fun. After that, I went to Buckhead just to drive around, and
that's where I was.
I couldn't believe Buckhead. I mean, the street was thousands of broken glasses in the street. I'm like, oh my God, this is wild here.
Did you go to any bars or anything that night in Buckhead?
You know what? I ended up going to this bar, but I only got probably 15 minutes. I have to leave. People were still so on top that they were, I thought I was going to get killed there.
I bet.
But, you know, they were excited. You know, they were happy, too happy. And I'm like, no, I gotta go.
Hey, Javi,
go ahead.
I was gonna say, have you spoken to Wohlers in the last few years? You know, because it looks like he's just disappeared. Do you have any idea how he is or what he's doing?
I had no idea. It's like you say, he totally disappeared. I even asked some of the guys, and they heard from Wallace or anything, and nobody knows about him. Nobody knows about him.
Wow.
And I know. I actually spoke not too long ago with Steve Avery. And, you know, because this guy know him very well, he was on the phone with him, and he's like, hey, Javi, here you go, talk to him. talk to this person right here. And then when I talked to him, it was Avery. I'm like, whoa. I guess he's in Michigan. You know, Wallace, he's like totally disappeared.
Yeah.
Wonder where he at.
Yeah. So, Javi, getting back to the 96 series, I think it's easy as fans when we look at game 5 and game 6, the offense kind of disappeared. And I think it's easy for us to say that the Braves just were shell-shocked after Leyritz homer. But you were there, and you're in the clubhouse. Was that the feeling in the clubhouse, or was it just you ran up against two pitchers and you guys just couldn't get it going those last two games?
Well, after Leyritz hit the home run after the Yankees beat us in that game, I kind of feel that they picked up big time the momentum. You know, their momentum was totally ahead of ours,
yeah.
and that's why I told to myself that, you know, okay, things are going to be a lot harder now, you know. Because once you beat the first two games, you know, easy, lose the, you know, first two games easy, and then all of a sudden we lost three in a row, I'm like, come on.
Well, yeah, and being up 6-0 in game 4.
Exactly. I'm like, you know what? If we couldn't pull it off, you know, the past three games at home, you know, what are the chances now? I mean, we could have totally turned it around, but you know what? It was a totally different ball game, and, you know, they beat us three times a year. They got the momentum, and, you know, it was hard to get back, you know, where we were in the first two games. It was hard. And you know what? It was the player that you expect. How can I explain this? The player that you don't expect the most out of him is the one that really caused the most damage for the Braves. You know, Joe Giraldi was one of them.
Scott Brosius.
Those are the players that you don't have to be worried about that much offensively, because I know that, you know, they're, according to their numbers offensively, they're, you know, we can get them out, no problem. The one that you have to be worried is, like, you know, back there, you know, Bernie Williams, Derek Jeter, all these guys that, you know, they can rake, and, you know, but no, Joe Giraldi. I remember Chili Davey was one of them, too. Chili Davey was in that team.
Right.
And he did a lot of damage to us. Even Strawberry was in that team, too, if I'm not mistaken. And, you know, those are the type of guys that we won't worry about them. Those are the ones that really caused us the most damage.
So, Javi, after the 96 series, again, from a fan's perspective, there's a lot of talk about, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s, that the Braves were, you know, they lacked fire. They weren't passionate. They were a team built for the regular season, but not the postseason. But again, you were there. Did you feel that, like, the team didn't get up for the postseason? Yeah?
You're talking about the 2000s?
Well, I'm just talking about the... You know, the sweep of the Cardinals in 2002 or in 2000 or the 2002 loss to the Giants. Just some of the, you know, some of the performances in the postseason after 96. Do you feel like the team got up for it like they needed to and things just didn't go their way? Or?
Well, we just couldn't pull it off. We did our best job throughout the whole regular season. Once we came to the playoff, it was kind of hard to explain what was happening to us because I just couldn't figure it out. I'm like, here's the Braves who won 100 games and 100 games. And yeah, we lost against a team who were the wild card or who was 20 games or 15 games behind us or something like that. You know what I mean? Why this is happening? It's just why? And my answer, I just couldn't answer it. It's just why this is happening to us? Are we being cursed or why this is happening? At the same time, I have to mention that it was disappointed to see on the playoff, to see our stadium, not completely full. You can see the upper deck kind of empty. And we are like, okay, we're in the playoff. I mean, we have a chance, to win this and go to the World Series. I want this fan support, I want this fan support. And that wasn't the reason why we didn't win. But, it was something that we saw. And it was kind of disappointing just because we played the other team we play against with. When we played in their stadium, that place was, completely full, sold out. The stadium was screaming as loud as they can. And then we come to Atlanta, and the stadium couldn't sold out. I'm like, why? Why? And
you think the two tie together though? Do you think the postseason's as given after 96, you guys make one more World Series in 99? Do you think that they kind of tie together, the lack of support in Atlanta, the dwindling attendance in Atlanta?
Support in a play is a big factor. Just take a look at the Yankees. How many times the Yankees fan actually makes the Yankee team win.
Right.
Once this Yankee fan start cheering and pumped up, the whole team completely changed. And you know what? That kind of intimidate the opposite team.
Well, and you said it earlier about Game 6 of the 95 World Series that you had never heard it louder. And obviously that's the biggest victory you guys have ever
had. Absolutely.
So.
The fans, the fans totally intimidate the opposite team and obviously pumps, the home teams up big time. And the Yankees is a perfect example. You know what? I played against the Yankees many times, and we were winning. And you know what? We end up losing in the eighth or in the ninth inning. Why? Because, once they have an out and the second hitter get a walk, once they have a walk, once the fans see people in first base, boom. And you know what? You could start smelling something, that something's going to be wrong here. And boom, the next hitter got a base hit or another walk. And, the end of the game, Yankees win,
Yeah, the 99 series was like that a lot. You guys would get a lead, but it just didn't feel safe in Yankee Stadium.
Exactly. You know what? When you play against the Yankees, you just cannot feel comfortable about, about you're going to win that game. It's not over until the ninth inning. Any other stadium, sometimes you can say this is over in the sixth or in the seventh. In the Yankee Stadium, no. Yankee Stadium or Boston, one of those two places, it's not over until the ninth, because fans is a big factor in their team winning, without a doubt.
So Javi, much was made about you and Maddox. We won't go into all that, but I came upon an article I thought was pretty interesting. There was a big article written about Game 6 in the 96 NLCS. It was news that Bobby put you in. to catch. And Maddux had terrific success that night. I think it was two runs were scored in total. Mm-hmm. When you look back on the games you caught for Maddux, was there something different going on that night, or was it just that's how it turned out?
I caught Maddux before, so what do you mean about?
Well, there were some games that Maddux threw where you would come in, it would seem that you guys were having problems connecting or there were issues, but that game you guys seemed completely in sync and Maddux had a lot of success.
Well, you know what? I think all this communication thing and I think that was all media, in my opinion.
Oh, okay.
My opinion, just because Maddux never said anything to me. If there was some, miscommunication between, both of us, Maddux would definitely would have talked to me and would have said something, and I would have agree with him or disagree with him.
Right.
There was never an issue when it comes to communication. He and I, we had a pretty good strategy every game, and he, when there's men on second base, he was pretty much calling the pitch so we can speed up the game a little faster. So there was never an issue, in my opinion. I heard all kinds of stuff that matters don't want me behind the plate. Yes, I heard all those things. Whether it's true or not, I don't know, because I never heard that from the mouth of Maddux. I heard it from the newspaper. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, that's great, Javi. It's great to hear you say it, because it certainly was what was written about for years and years and years, and it's
exactly
it's great to hear you sort of weigh in on it.
And as far as I remember, the last time, because in 1994, '94, I think that was the last time Maddux won the Cy Young, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
And that year I saw him every time.
Yeah, and it's funny. I read that quote from Maddux today regarding this topic, and he said, "There's no issue with me and Javi. I want to Cy Young with him." So yeah.
Yeah, right. I'm like, 1995 was the year that he won the Cy Young. I caught him every day. John Small was the guy that I never catch him. Every time he pitches. That's what Charlie O'Brien used to catch him all the time, just because, in 94, John Small was a tough pitcher to catch. He got that nasty split finger, and he threw a lot of balls in the ground, and Charlie O'Brien, he was a veteran guy. He blocked really well, and Bobby Cox using him as, to catch Small. 1995 is when, Eddie Perez came to the team, and that's why he decided to put Eddie Perez to catch Maddux, and then I start catching Smoltz. So things changed right there. And the reason why he did that, I don't know. I always thought that Bobby Cox just did that just to give me a chance to rest, since I play, six out of 7 days a week.
Right.
So he decided to do that. Whether the reason why he did that is because Maddux didn't want me behind the plate or not, like I say, I only heard that from the media. I never heard it from Bobby. I never heard it from Maddux. So I don't know what the reality of that.
Right.
So
they gotta create that, some story.
Yeah, we'd love to find out. Or if you ever find out about from the mouth of Bobby or Maddux, that would be great to know.
Well, if you've got their phone numbers that you can give to us, we'll
give them a call. Yeah. Right. Hey, Javi, we'll start wrapping up here. I thank you for giving us your time. I want to ask you quickly about the Mark McGwire interview this month with Bob Costas. McGwire said that he wished he'd never played in the steroid era. Given that you played in that same era, do you share that opinion? That you wish you'd never played in the steroid era?
Well, unfortunately, you know, we all been, you know, everybody's going to look at us now. The fact that we played in that era, everybody's going to look at us that we all use steroids, you know.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, you know, we all have to pay, you know, that consequence. I don't blame him for him to say that. Unfortunately, you know, he did play in that era. Unfortunately, he did use the steroid. And back in the days, you know, steroid wasn't legal in the big league, but it wasn't a concern. I guess that's the right thing to say.
Right.
Major League was actually looking in players is drugs, you know, make sure they don't have any kind of drugs, like, you know, I guess marijuana, cocaine, or whatever.
Right.
That's what Dwight Gooden, you know, got suspended, and a lot of players, you know, got suspended for drugs and stuff. But never for steroids, you know, until the Canseco comments in, you know, 2003?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you say that there just wasn't that much sort of concern or spotlight on it. What was it? Was it around? I mean, was it something that the players knew? At the end of the night, throughout the 90s, early 2000s.
Is that was something that the players knew?
Yeah, did the players know that it was going on? I mean, was it spoken about?
Well. Everybody's seen players getting big, hitting the ball harder,
yeah.
You know, home runs and stuff. All of a sudden, boom, they got the big contract, and everybody's like, you know what? He did that. It works for him. Why not doing it? You know what I mean? And everybody, you know, starting from the minor leagues, you know, minor leagues are the first one to try all that because they got this, you know, hunger to be in the big league so bad that they do whatever it takes to make it to the big league and not only to make it to the big league but to be the best in the big league. And that's what steroids do, you know, to you. I mean, that's what, you know, steroids was doing to a lot of players in the big league.
Right. So yeah. So people were looking at it and seeing this, you know, that this is an option and this is an opportunity, and people were doing it.
It's my opinion, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, how can I explain this? It's like if you're gonna race cars, right? If you're gonna race a car and some people using nitro in their fuel, and right. You see them win all the time, and you're using regular gas. You know what? If they're using nitro and they'll be winning, well, I'd be stupid enough not to use nitro too, you know?
Right. I look at it. I can't believe everyone didn't think that as well.
Exactly. The game of baseball, too, it's just because you use steroids doesn't mean you're going to hit the ball hard. I know a lot of players, well, not a lot of players, but I know of players that, you know, use steroids, and you know what? He struck out more. Couldn't hit the ball.
Right.
So the bottom line is that in baseball, you still have to hit the ball. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
If steroids do not help you hitting the ball, or makes you see the ball better, or makes you, you know, you still have to have the talent, you know. You still have to have the talent. But what does help you is just to hit the ball further.
right. Exactly.
Further.
Right. Well, and further. He doesn't talk about all the pitchers that were using steroids too. It's
exactly.
Seems like it's all
pitchers as well, and pitchers obviously they throw a lot harder, you know, a lot faster. So you know that exactly. You're facing pitcher that used steroids. You're facing, you know, the pitcher facing batter that used steroids. So, you know, it's a mess. You know, if we talk about that, we never end the case. It was a mess. But
and is it your brother-in-law Juan Gonzalez? Is he in your brother-in-law?
Used to be. He married my sister for
He got wrapped up in a lot of that too. I remember.
Yeah, that was a mess. Her marriage with him was a mess. Everything was a mess. Mm. But you know what? I'm glad that everything came out. And you know, now when you see a player out there, you know it's 100%. Well, not cannot say 100%, but at least you know they're clean.
Right.
You know. At least you know they're clean.
All right, Javi, let's end with this, coming back to this year. What do you think about the current construction of the 2010 Braves? You think they will have more success this year than last year? You think they can go farther?
Well, they still got a pretty good team. They got great, you know, great players, great coaching staff, you know, which is, you know, this is what you need. It's all about the chemistry of the team. It's not only about individual players, but it's all how you create this chemistry, because it's a team, you know. As long as everybody stay healthy and you know, keep up with a good chemistry, you know, the team is going to do very well. I mean, it's hard to compare with the Philly. You know, they spent a lot of money on pitchers, they spent a lot of money on players. You know, Bray hasn't done that you know, the same way as the Philly, but you know what? Just take a look at the Tampa Bay Devil Rays a couple of years ago. You know what? Whoever thought they were going to be in the World Series, and right. They almost beat the Phillies. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but the chemistry in that team was impeccable. So, who needs, you know, to pay $200 million in players? You know,
right. You look at the Mets, and all that money doesn't help them.
No, the Yankees. You know, they were in the Yankee division, Yankees and Boston.
Right,
and they beat all of them. So, why is because that chemistry in the clubhouse, and you know, that's very important.
Yep.
Players need to understand that they cannot only play individual; they need to play as a team. You know, and once everybody had that attitude in their mind, you know what? You're going to have a world champion team.
That's you got exactly any thoughts on who might replace Bobby? You think Eddie Perez has a shot of replacing Bobby?
You know what? I heard somebody told me that she heard Bobby mention Eddie as his replacement. And I'm like, wow. Let's go, Eddie. I need a job.
or Terry Pendleton. Terry Pendleton's been a name that's thrown around. You played with him too, didn't you? Or was that before you?
Yeah. I don't think Terry will take that position. But I think he's very happy that the position he's in right now. But to be honest with you, the guy that I thought he might take his spot would be, there's two people. One would be, I mean, I thought it was going to be either Freddy Gonzalez with the Marlins.
Right.
But I guess he's pretty much set with the Marlins for a few more years.
Yeah.
And the other guy was Ned Yost, because he's a big part of the Atlanta organization, you know, in the 90s. And
well, he's still unemployed, isn't he?
Yeah.
No, I guess he got I forgot what team. Somebody signed him as a
bench coach or something, right?
Something.
Yeah.
Something. I read that the other day on ESPN. Yeah, he's definitely got a job now. And that was the other guy that I thought he might, you know. But that was this year. He signed for this year. I don't know, next year. So, you know what? I think Nate Yost still a good possibility for the Braves. I mean, he knows the organization, he knows everybody, and, you know, Braves like to keep the organization as a family and like to bring people that, you know, pretty much grew up with the Braves. And definitely Nate Yost was one of them.
Although, if we believe your friend, Javi, we'll be seeing Eddie Perez next year.
Yeah, go Eddie.
Go Eddie.
You know, Brian Snicker is another candidate. You know, he's a tremendous guy and had a lot of knowledge and can definitely can carry this team to, you know, can definitely manage this team. Mm. So there's going to be, with Snicker now, it'll be three people that can pretty much run the team. Who's going to end up taking that spot? Who knows? You know, who knows? I hope somebody good.
Yeah, well, us too. All right, Javi. Go ahead, Javi.
No, I was going to say it's going to be a tough, you know, tough spot to fill because Bobby, he's a Hall of Famer. And it's going to be a tough spot to fill.
Yeah, it's just going to be strange not to see Bobby there. Just as a fan, it's going to be so weird to see someone else at the top of the stairs there.
Exactly. Well, and you know what? My other opinion is that don't be surprised if Bobby decides to go another year. Why not?
Yeah. I mean, I think Chipper has said that too, that he won't believe it until he really steps down.
Exactly. It's tough to be retired, you know? It's tough to be retired. I didn't realize that until I didn't play in 2007 and after I retired in 2008. It is tough, you know. You're so used to go, you know, have a routine every year, you know, working out in the winter, playing during the season, you know, and all of a sudden you don't have any of that, and wow, it hits you. Especially, you know, when you feel like you can still doing it, you know. Me as a player, Bobby Cousins as the manager, you know, he can retire next year, but if he feels that he can still manage, you know, it's going to be hard for him, you know, to be retired.
Well, especially manage, because it's a physical thing, you know. I mean, it's just a you've-decided thing. It's not like, oh, well, my body's not going to allow me to play anymore, because his body clearly, you know, with his knees and everything else. You know, it's obviously the mental capacity, and not saying that he doesn't have his mental capacity, but, yeah, I mean, it must be tough to retire as a manager, knowing that...
You could really go another year.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, Javi, thank you so much for your time tonight. You've been really generous and really gracious. We appreciate it. It's been an honor to speak to you, and we'd love to do it again in the future.
Oh, sure. It's a pleasure, Steve. I mean, this is, you know, type of moment that the few type of moment that I have that I can express and that I can, you know, share with people, you know, my history with the Braves. So, you know, it's always good to talk about it.
All right, Javi. Well, thanks again. You have a great night.
All right, Steve. You too.
So, Kurt, we just for everyone who's listening to know, we just wrapped up the interview with Javi a couple minutes ago, and wow.
Wow, indeed.
I mean, it was so, this is in no way to put down anybody, but Javi was, like, really forthcoming and really wanted to talk, and I was just kind of blown away by all that.
Well, I have to say, and we've said it a couple of times, it's amazing how forthright these guys are, and they have no reason to talk to us at all in the first place, frankly, but then that they're so honest and so frank with us, it's so awesome. It's so refreshing to the genuineness of these guys, just the down-to-earth nature of these guys, the heroes of our recent past, of course. I mean, and Javi Lopez, my God, I mean, he's the greatest catcher in the history of the Braves. He's like Mount Rushmore material for the Atlanta Braves, certainly an Atlanta Braves Hall of Famer at some day, I would say. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah, and truly one of our favorites. I mean, that wasn't
absolutely
lip service to him. I mean, just one of our favorites, top
and across
three,
the board.
You know?
I mean, I told you before, my girlfriend was so in love with him at one point that her cat was named Javi. I mean, she was obsessed with him.
Right. But, you know, just some quick things, like, very interesting about the, at the start of the interview, about the being told that the Braves were just going to carry one catcher you know, at the end of the 2008 spring training.
And it was Corky. And it was Corky. Oh my! I mean, I almost spit out whatever I was had in my mouth at the time that he said it was Corky Miller. My God, that was hilarious, and I mean, unbelievable. Would it not have been worth anything to have Javi Lopez back in your dugout as opposed to Corky Miller?
Well, Corky, and I know you know, I mean, I almost get it. Javi wasn't really throwing guys out that well in spring training,
sure.
but that they kept Brian Peña as really the backup catcher. You know, the right. backup.
But isn't there like a butts in the seat factor?
Well, that's what I'm saying. How do you not keep Javi at least along, you know, in tandem with Corky?
Right.
Really crazy. What else? I thought it was very interesting to finally hear a Brave come out and talk about that it was a bummer and it affected them that they didn't sell out postseason games in the
90s. That was interesting. And I mean, and sad, frankly. If that has played, and it certainly, of course, everyone recognizes that because it's a downer for a fan to be there and looking up at the stands and seeing them all empty. But God, if we think that we had a larger responsibility in the Brave, but honestly, through 95, 96, they were sold out. It was only after that they really started doing bad. But the funny thing was when we were on this conversation that I thought about is think of the impact in the long term, and I've never really thought about this until we were just talking to Javi Lopez. Steve Avery.
Yeah.
What if Steve Avery had retained his ability and how unbelievably brilliant he was when he was young, 91, 92, and if they could have continued to have Steve Avery on the team as a counter where you had Smoltz and Maddox from the right, Avery and Glavin from the left. I mean, good Lord.
Yeah, no doubt, man. No doubt. So what else? So the stuff about Maddox was great to hear him come out and say, look, you know, it's a media thing. And Maddox, I never heard it from Maddox's mouth. Now, I don't know that I truly believe it was just a fiction of the media's imagination. I do think there's something to it, but it was interesting to hear him speak so passionately about, look, you know, Maddox never said anything. He had great success with me. Why is this such a big deal?
Right. I guess the point that he made that he caught Maddox so much that one season and when he won the Cy Young, but I don't know, maybe there, you have to wonder, and given that it was more, and especially in the postseason, when he wouldn't catch Maddox
right.
in the postseason.
Exactly. It's not that like you're getting rest at that point. You don't
right.
need
or
it.
That you, yeah, or that you should even be taking it if you need it. You got to be out there every single day. And I fault, honestly, I fault Bobby Cox more for that. Of course I do.
Of course. Well, there's no one else to.
Yeah.
I mean,
and Bobby gets most of my blame anyway, so.
Well, sure. So it's an easy call for you to make.
Yes.
All right. Well, gosh, really, what an exciting night for us! I got to
really,
say.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking about who we've talked to over the past year, and from the Glavin interview that you got to do at the beginning of the season to Javi Lopez today. What an amazing year we've had catching up with these guys. It's just profound, I have to say.
Yeah. Let's not forget Dale Murphy.
I'm humbled
too.
By our. Yeah, oh my God, how did I forget Dale Murphy? But yes, humbled by our opportunity that has come along with ABT.
Agreed.
So, a couple of thoughts on the show. This was a very exciting time for us, as was evidenced by Kurt and Steve's debrief after the interview, geeking out on how cool it was to interview Javi. It still is very exciting for us to this day. We've been really lucky. And you can tell that we are still relatively new to the game as the audio quality. We called Javi on his cell phone and somehow his audio quality was still better than Curtis's. You know, and at this point in our history, our highlights had been getting to interview Dale Murphy was our biggest highlight. Number two was Steve getting butt dialed by Dale Murphy after the interview. And then it was the Javi interview, and it still is a great highlight for us. And one reason it is because it sort of blew up for us a little bit more than any other interview had at that point. Craig Calcaterra, who is a great, great follower on Twitter and is also a Braves fan, he listened to it. He heard the stuff that Javi had to say about steroids and juicing and the stuff he didn't say. And he tweeted the link out and sort of made a little bit of a buzz about it to his followers. And then DOB also referenced it in his blog. And there was a buzz there. So for a little while, we felt like, I don't know, movie stars or Woodward and Bernstein at the very least. It was great. It was great. It was still a great memory. That's the Javi interview. So we're going to move on to Shots in the Dark and our week ahead. But first, we'll take a quick break. All right. Shots in the Dark, where we make our zany predictions for the week ahead. And we will start, as always, by looking at the previous week. And we'll start with our listener-submitted shot. So we took one from Chicken Parmesan on Twitter. We'll just call him Sean. And he actually recently had one and won, or was so close to winning. It was an amazing one. So we wanted to have him back on here to see if he could to bring back the mojo. Parmesan said that Braves would score more runs against the Mets than the Falcons would score points against the Packers. First of all, the Braves scored 7 runs against the Mets. So let's get out there. And I'm recording this now at halftime of the Falcons game, and the Falcons scored 7 points in about, it seemed like, 50 seconds. And then since then, have put up 24 more unanswered points. So, Sean, you are wrong. And I'm happy you're wrong, but thanks for playing, buddy. So let's go to ours. Curtis was out last week, did not get his submission in on time. For those of you who don't know, he deserves a pass because since last Friday, Kurt has been to a Cubs-Brewers game in Wrigley, the UGA-Notre Dame game in South Bend, the Falcons-Bears game at Soldier Field, and then he was back home in Georgia this week for the UGA game yesterday up in Athens, and then back here for the Falcons home opener tonight. Kurt likes sports. He does not like Shots in the Dark, though, apparently. I predicted last week that Ozzy and Dansby would combine for 15 or more hits this week. Dansby had 3 hits. Ozzy had 6 hits, totaling 9, which is not 15, so I am wrong. And now we have Steve. So Steve said that Gohara would give up less runs and get more strikeouts than his opponent this week, Gio Gonzalez. A funny thing happened on the way to Nationals Park. Gohara did give up fewer runs than his opponent. He had only 1 fewer strikeout than his opponent, so almost close enough to win. But due to Steve's faulty research, Gohara's opponent was Max Scherzer, not Gio Gonzalez. So had it been Gonzalez, he still did give up fewer runs, but he gave up 1 less strikeout than Scherzer. Had it been Gonzalez, who got pummeled on Tuesday night, he would have also had fewer earned runs, but then again had fewer strikeouts than Gonzalez. Gohara had 6, Scherzer and Gonzalez had 7 and 8 respectively. So Steve, you were so close, and we need someone to win because these lack of wins are piling up, but I cannot give it to you. I'm sorry, my friend. Too much on the line to win on a technicality, which means we are still tied for August and September, and it builds up week to week. So let's look at this week. We're all in. Kurt sent his in. He predicted that the starters would have a sub-3 ERA for the week, which would be great, particularly for Dickey. Steve predicted that Dansby would hit over 400 this week, which we would love to see since he certainly didn't do that this week. I predict that Freeman will hit over 300 this week, but with only 2 extra base hits. A lot of singles, not a lot of power. So those are ours. You guys, get your submissions in as well. Get your shots in the dark in before Tuesday's first pitch, and we will pick one like we did for Sean. And discuss it on next week's show. You can tweet us your picks and include hashtag ABTSITD when you tweet it. And do it fast. Submissions have waned as the season has gone on. You guys are getting tired. You're losing focus. Come on, guys. We're still in this. We still have a chance for 2019. So play along. Finally, let's end it with the week ahead. We have 6 games this week, all at home. starting with three against the Nats and three against the Phillies, who we don't even want to talk about. Let's look at the matchups. I have to say, these are courtesy of ESPN. There are a lot of different ideas of who's starting this week, so proceed with your own caution here. And since we have so many options, can't tell if Freed's starting, so here's what I was able to find. Against the Nats, we start with a rematch. Gio Gonzalez gets another shot at us and will actually face Luis Gohara this time, unlike last week. Gohara has a 6.3 ERA. But we know he is a Nats killer, Luis Gohara. He's going to face Gonzalez, who is still sporting a nice 2.68 ERA, even after last week's eight-run debacle. Wednesday, Max Scherzer gets a second chance. He still has a 2.59 ERA. He faces Lucas Sims and his 5.52 ERA. Would love to have another offensive outburst against Scherzer. Thursday against the Nats, we close with Tanner Roark and his 4.43 ERA going against Sean Newcomb, who looked great this past week. Nuke's ERA is actually lower than Tanner Roark's at 4.32. Then Brave Killers come to town, and the Phillies, they'll start with Ben Lively and his 3.94 ERA going up against the recently not-so-great R.A. Dickey, who is sort of pitching like he doesn't want to be considered as an option for next season for the Braves. Dickey comes in with a 4.41 ERA, but really has struggled lately. Saturday, Henderson Alvarez will make his second start of the season for the Phillies. He will face Julio Teheran. Teheran's got a 4.57 ERA. We saw both the great and the not-so-great Teheran this week. Sunday, we will end with Nick Pivetta and his 6.75 ERA, who will go up against Gohara, who will get his second start of the week. Excited for Gohara to get his second start of the week. Excited for Folty to maybe get a week off. Don't know if we will see Freed. Would like to see Freed. So should be an exciting week. Pay attention, and we'll be back next Sunday. So that's the show, folks. Thanks for listening. And remember that you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com, BlogTalkRadio.com. Follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk, and follow us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. Had to admit